Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you for listening. If you are enjoying the show, please do rate and review and subscribe. I know every podcast asks you to do that. Sorry. It genuinely helps other people find the show because it goes up in the chart, and then that means more people listen, and that means we can carry on making more episodes. So it's really appreciated. And if you have done it already, thank you. I'll read all the comments, and it's just incredibly touching to know it's helping in any way, shape or form. So thank you. If you are into podcasts, I'm a guest on the very brilliant Adam Buxton's podcast this week. He was actually the first guest we had on Griefcast, and if you haven't listened to his episode, I recommend it. He's just wonderfully funny and heartbreakingly honest about his dad dying at his home when he was very elderly, so I'd recommend a listen. I'm a guest on his show this week talking about grief. Of course I am, but I'm also talking about some other lighter stuff, so if you want, I don't know, something a little bit more lighter after the grief, go there. But if you're looking for more grief, stay tuned. We've also been nominated for 2 British Podcast Awards, so you can vote for us in the Listener's Choice. If you head to the British Podcast Awards website, you can vote for us there. And again, that would be hugely appreciated by the team, which is me and Kate, so we would really like that. Thank you. This week, I'm talking to comic and DJ Tom Price. Tom is an award-winning stand-up. He hosts BBC Wales' brilliant weekly satirical show, The Leak. You can hear him regularly on Magic FM, or you might have seen him on Torchwood, Victoria, Episodes, or even Midsummer Murders. Tom came in to talk to me about his dad, who died when he was 13. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with Tom Price, DJ and comic. I always say it so badly every episode. I'm like, and that's what you do.
I thought you would do this bit when I wasn't here.
Yeah.
I'd prefer it if... No, can not, I leave the room while you do this?
It's not the introduction bit. It's just the bit of the game where I just say, at least say your name.
Yeah.
Who are we remembering today?
So, remembering my dad.
Your dad. What's your dad's name?
Like my dad, well, he was called Richard, but he went by the dick.
He went by
he
dick.
Went for dick. He
the
went
moniker
for dick.
Of dick.
He was a dick, and he was also a dickie.
Oh, Dickie, that's lovely.
Oh, gosh, so posh. I mean, that is an overriding theme here. My posh background is going to, in the story of my sort of
right,
what
poshness,
happened.
Yeah.
Well, poshness. Let's not go with poshness. Quite middle class is the new euphemism for when you've lucked out in life. It was very middle class, but I grew up in a very nice town in South
Wales.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And my dad had this kind of. He had several lives going on.
Right.
All very big.
Okay.
He was a big guy in the
and
town.
He's Welsh.
He was born in Lydney in Forest of Dean, but grew up in South Wales.
Okay.
So he counted himself as Welsh.
And whereabouts in South Wales, just so
Monmouth town, just over the border.
Just over the border.
Safely nestled in the armpit below Hereford. So my dad. So in Monmouth life, in that sort of, he's like his mum was mayor of the town.
Wow.
And he was Dick. That's what he was known as, Dick. And to all his, it's very hard not to giggle when you say it, even now. To all his business life, his working life, which all happened in London, he was Dickie. He was Dickie.
Oh, okay.
I think I've got that the right round. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. But the point is, he had these two different names, and he was very, very clinical about that.
Oh, I see.
And each life was massive. So his business life was. He worked for a thing called the CBI, which is the Confederation of British Industry,
right?
Which is this pseudo political organisation which looks after, it's like a trade union, but for the bad guys. They look after the bosses. That's their thing. So he was an economist, and he was on all sorts of boards of trade and all these things, massive, massive life. And then he'd come back every weekend. So he was away in the week. And then I'd see him on the weekends.
Oh, I see. So he didn't choose to move his family.
He did not choose to move his family.
Because it's just really reminding me of my grandfather from Bridgend, Bertie, moved the family. That's why I'm in London.
Uh-huh.
And he was a solicitor, but then he worked for the Port of London Authority
had,
again, Bertie, big life in London, but he moved everybody.
It sounds like
he
loved his family as opposed to.
Well, that's a whole other episode. I don't know. I think he wanted the family to fit the picture, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's like for, you know.
For the purposes of
wife
display.
And children, for, yeah.
My dad just didn't do that. And this is a big part of the story of my dad. Very, really not a happy marriage with my mum, who I lived with. It was really bad.
So you were, was that from, like, do you remember him ever being at home, or was it always off? Like, he always went off?
He was at home, but it was always temporary. He was constantly, he would go on a Sunday night, he'd drive back to London, and he'd arrive either on a Friday night or a Saturday morning.
Wow.
And I know, looking back now, it's so weird.
Yeah.
And when I think of, like, it's just so, how did he do that? So everything was temporary. The only time I'd spend a lot of time with him was in the summer. We'd go out to France, and just the two of us would spend 3 weeks together, which was great. But apart from that, everything was on a time limited basis.
Yeah, and you've got two older brothers.
So I've got two older brothers, and that kind of feeds into what happened as well, because they're 8 and 10 years older than me.
Oh wow, yeah, so quite a big gap.
Yeah, I mean, massive accident, massive. as my mum said to me when my wife was pregnant with our first child, my mum phoned me up and she was saying how excited she was. And she said, it was amazing, really, because, of course, I was told to have an abortion when I was pregnant with you. It's like, great. Thanks for adding that little
just what I need.
Float that into my... And this is, if you've ever seen The Sopranos, the mum in The Sopranos, Tony Soprano's mum, I think it's Lillian Soprano, there's an element of narcissism going on there, right? Which okay. She's okay. She knows that. You know, she's still alive and kicking. Hopefully she won't listen to this. I don't think she has a technical ability. So yeah.
I was going to say, sometimes you don't need to worry because I can't figure out podcasts.
Exactly. Exactly. There's no way. What is it? Is it like a text message? No. So she had me much later than everyone else. Also, another element to the story as well. Gosh, there's so much stuff going on here. My mum has cerebral palsy.
Wow.
Quite mild, hence why she was okay to have kids and stuff like that. And also she was an alcoholic as well, which I talked about in an Edinburgh show a couple of years ago. So there's quite a lot of levels of stuff going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I was born in 1980. And by the time various bits of feces started to hit the fan in the late 80s, my brothers left. They went off to university and started their lives.
Wow.
Kind of like with me by myself, just left there.
Suddenly almost like an only child.
And exactly like an only child, but with several dads.
Yeah,
because you had my dad and then my brothers. And then my dad died in 1993.
93, wow. So you were 13.
Yeah. Isn't that like the worst age, apparently? Is that the worst one or not?
I was 15.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, Beth Rylance, who came on, she was one. I always think that trumped everything I'd ever said because I was like, her mum died when she was one.
Oh, mum.
And I sort of thought, yeah, all right.
That's really
I know bad. We say there's not a hierarchy. We always say there's not a hierarchy. There's not a hierarchy. But that day I definitely thought.
It's amazing. I was once doing, I was working at Madame Tussauds I was pretending to be the guy who makes the models.
Oh, amazing.
Right, with a bunch of actors. And it turned out that of the other eight actors, six of them were in something which they called the DDC, the Dead Dads Club. This is like 2002, so I was only 22 at the time, and I kind of still felt a certain sense of specialness and ownership over this incredible thing that I had, this crown of sadness. And I was like, what?
What? There's a club?
Hang on a second. Yeah, I was livid. And then they would all compare the ages at which their dads died. And there was a very clear hierarchy. And they talked about it in such a factual, gallows humour kind of way. It was quite good for me, I think.
That's really good.
It was good.
And
that stage I was still... Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose if you get that many of you together...
It's inevitable.
You just start going, oh, yeah, okay. Well, yeah, we all know how we feel.
Yeah.
But we talk about that a lot in the podcast and on Twitter of, the DDC or the DMC.
Yeah.
Because... And or like when I had Amy Hoggart on as well, we particularly her dad died, but also the same thing my dad died of, pancreatic cancer. So we were like even more in the DDC, PC.
And were there very specific memories that you had when like did their illnesses?
Yeah, there was just a lot of similar stuff that was just like, oh, right. Yeah. It's just that thing of looking for your tribe, isn't it?
Yes.
But that's interesting that you said you had never felt you'd been part of a tribe before. So you always thought it was your kind of unique.
Yeah, I did. Definitely.
So when it happened to you, because what happened to me, I lost my dad when I was 15, but I had friends at school that also lost their dads.
Oh, really? Okay.
So then I felt like, oh, obviously there wasn't loads of us. I think there was three girls in the same class.
Did you bond with them?
Yeah, definitely. And one I'm still very good friends with and we still have that like gallows humour about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But like when you were at school then, so you were at school at 13, secondary school.
Yeah, so I was at secondary school. I think the other big thing, the other sort of important thing to know about this sort of the story is that small town, the school, a private school, was a big part of the community. Like it's my dad went there, in the 50s or whatever it was. Both my brothers went there. They knew all the teachers. My gran was a governor on the school. Like that thing, which, I don't want people to think that I'm kind of going, listen to the layers of my privilege, because I'm sure that is, it's a lucky, what a brilliant thing that I went to a fee-paying school and all that stuff. But it was fairly horrific.
Yeah.
In itself, anyway, irrelevant of my dad dying. But when my dad died, this whole kind of community thing, and it was just really badly handled. It just... Like, teachers I didn't know saying, I'm your dad now. I'm going to be like your dad now. I can remember one of them saying it to me at the end of a Spanish lesson, 6 weeks after he died, and I'm sitting there. I went back to school, 20 minutes after he died as well. Like,
no time.
I remember back at school, 3 days later, and he died quickly. It wasn't a long, drawn-out thing. He was ill for, 2 weeks.
Yeah, so what happened? So he was healthy up until this point.
Yeah, he was quite healthy. He was in his late 40s. He was quite overweight, and he got meningitis.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he got meningitis and it kind of came on and then they thought they had it and in that way that it's just a giant infection, they thought the infection had died down, they sent him home.
Was this in London or Monmouth?
In London.
Oh my
God. So this all happened at a distance to me.
Your
dad's
God.
Ill and I was like, oh, okay. I was sort of carrying on with this vague sense of it. Hushed conversations going on. My mum just sort of... you know, drinking her way through it and not really aware of it. I knew he was ill and I spoke to him, and which actually turns out it was the last time I ever spoke to him on the phone, and he had a lot, he sustained a lot of brain damage, so he had a really bad kind of, this is the cold. he couldn't really talk properly. And that was the last time I spoke to him. And then he went back into hospital like 2 days later and then he died. So he was quick.
Yeah, so they just suddenly caught meningitis and...
Yeah, it was cold. It was like a cold... I think it can happen. It was a cold that got out of hand or something. And it's also, what's amazing is it's meningitis which, I think I'm right in saying this, the strand of which they've now got a vaccine for.
Yeah, they vaccinate babies for it.
So I vaccinated my kids for it, which was just like, oh, what a moment. So he went back in and then the shit hit the fan. Then I got the, you know, I was in... what lesson was it? I was in Latin.
Oh my God, you were literally in
Latin. This is such a private school cliche, isn't it? I'm in Latin. And the deputy headmaster came in. The deputy headmaster was also one of my dad's best friends. But this is how ingrained and like this whole idea of the school being a family. It's like, yeah, it just means everyone knows your business and it's there's no
hiding place,
I guess. There's no hiding place for it.
If it's not handled well, I guess, as well. Yeah. Like, it was handled great, brilliant, you got
also,
support.
Everyone knew my business, but no one really cared if I can go that far. No one ever really sat me down. Lots of people went, listen, boy, we know what you're going through.
Yeah.
All the best. And you're like, great. So who do I go to? Who do I actually go and sit and weep in front of? Because there really wasn't anyone.
That's really interesting that you said that, because everyone at my school knew, because I live next door to my head of year and history teacher.
Right.
So I'm like, my mum now works at that school as well, and my brother went to that school. So it's very involved.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm not a state school, but I mean, a middle class North London state school.
Right, okay.
And I remember a lot of teachers saying, we know what you're going through.
Yes.
But I felt exactly the same, like, and?
What are you going to do?
What does that mean? Yeah. And then.
If you need anything. Well,
yeah, but I always felt really frustrated because I was like, but you're asking me to ask? I don't know.
Yes.
I want you to say.
Yes.
I want you to ask me, like, how are you feeling? Or do you miss your dad? Like, to ask a question? Because I remember being like, everyone's expecting me to suddenly know how to verbalise it. And I don't know what to say. I just know I feel all these things and I don't know what to do with them.
Like, so true. No one took ownership of it in that way.
Yeah.
My mum wasn't really capable of it. My brother's, it's just that kind of repressed thing as well, which makes me mad now.
Yeah.
But that idea that, you know, I can remember the teacher who I really liked saying, if you ever need anything, let me know. And he went out of his way to say that, but he never did anything else again.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to understand, like, there were several times where I thought, God, I'd love to just say, can I talk to you?
Yeah.
But I would never do that. It's a 13-year-old boy.
I want you to say...
You have to come get me.
Do you want to talk about it? And then if I say nothing, I want you to go, you must be feeling pretty sad. It must be. Like, I want you to start the conversation because I don't know how to. Because I'm not a grown-up who can go, yeah, you know what? I've been feeling...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you don't
I can
know.
Do it now. 25 years later, I can just about do it now.
Exactly.
But at the time, no one did that.
I guess, they don't have the training either, do they? So they don't know.
Of course. And this is why I'm so excited when I see there's some great charities now who are around for like Winston's Wish and stuff like that, for helping kids go through bereavement. Because back then there was no system, no one was trained up to deal with it, and it was deeply traumatic. And that's what annoys me, I guess, about this community of people around me. It's a very populated stage, but no one is talking to me. There's lots of people making the right noises and putting the right faces and putting their arm around me, but no one's
really there. No. So you're in Latin.
I'm in Latin. There's a knock on the door. And your father's very ill. You've got to go to London now. So I went and met my mum.
So you went to London?
So we got on the train, went to London. So even now when I pull into Paddington, because I go to Cardiff a lot for work, I pull into Paddington and I'm still like, huh? Isn't that amazing? Years later, I still...
I completely understand. There's a road that is where the hospital to where my dad died.
Yeah.
And every time it's like in Hertfordshire, every time I think it, I think...
The flip.
Yeah. Oh, this is the road that goes to the hospital. Like,
And it sneaks up on you and it gets you.
But Paddington's annoying. You must have to use Paddington a lot.
Yeah, I rode in Hertfordshire. I mean, sure, but we're talking the Zone 1
exactly,
mainline station. One of the Monopoly big guys here.
Yeah.
it was... And then we got in a black cab, my first time in a black cab.
Oh,
great.
Well,
so,
exciting.
You know,
that's exciting.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then my dad was in a hospital on Harley Street, and he was in intensive care, and we sort of gathered around, and everyone was there, obviously, my mum and my brothers, and we had to just sort of, they were just sort of letting the illness take its course. They didn't know what to do with it, because it was encephalitis, his brain, they were trying to, they didn't know what to do with this swelling. I was reading, I remember sitting there, I was reading a Nick Faldo biography. great golfer, guys. One of the best golfers. Not least because he had a caddy called Fanny, which I always enjoyed a lot as a 13-year-old boy. Ask Fanny. I was reading that in this little waiting room downstairs in this basement. And I remember Toby, my middle brother, taking me upstairs. Like, I love my brothers, but I cannot talk to Toby about emotions at all. At all. And I remember him taking me upstairs and we were sitting in the waiting room over there. And it looks nice. And I'm sort of sitting on this big leather chair. And I said, is he going to be okay? And I remember him saying, he probably might die.
Oh, God.
He probably might die. Those were the words.
He probably might die.
He probably might die.
Oh, Tom.
Yeah. I know.
My face is covered by my hands. So I'm just like, I feel for you, because obviously no one's explained, because we don't talk about death, no one's explained to your brother, how should you tell your little brother?
No.
But that's a very unemotional
response,
isn't it?
Yeah, how old was he? He was 23.
Yeah, like, of course, like, what the fuck does he know?
He was a grown-up. In my head, he was 50 years old, but yeah. He's 23 years old.
That's what I think's hard with being a teenager, and obviously you're only just a teenager at 13. Yeah. Everybody seems like very much like grown-ups, and you think, yes. Why are you not behaving like I'm an adult in this situation? Yeah. Like, I remember me being like, why has everyone gone mental? You're supposed to be the ones that know what, but obviously death affects everybody.
Yeah,
but as a child, you're like, no, I want you guys to be stable, please. Yeah.
But that is part of it does lead to the inward nature of grief and going through it.
Yeah.
It just turns you in on yourself so much and you cannot understand why everyone else isn't in there with you.
Yeah.
You feel so like, why are you all being mad? You need to all be helping me. And you become a monster, really.
Yeah.
You can become a real diva. And it's not a done thing to say, God, people who are grieving are pricks. But they are. They can be massive dildos. And I think it needs to be acknowledged.
No, it's really true. Because it's like, obviously, because you know, obviously you're feeling so much that you can't see anything else.
And you don't,
you know.
It's the Truman Show. You're sitting in the Truman Show.
Yeah, it is. And obviously that's totally understandable how you're feeling, but I do think that is a truth to that your tolerance of things goes. And sometimes that's great. Sometimes you get rid of the bullshit in your life, but also sometimes if anybody else feels anything, you're like, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
you fell over. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care. And you're like, yeah.
It's so true.
And then
it's
as you so sort true. Of come through the process, you start going, oh yeah, maybe I can think about someone else's pain because your pain is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
So you're sat outside the room.
Yes.
Were you there when he died?
So not quite, no. We went in and we all went in, we were asked to go in, all of a sudden we're sitting there, I'm reading about Nick Faldo and his Fanny, and suddenly I'm like, put the book down, which is always irritating. I was like, all right, okay, we're going in, are we? And we all gathered around, we all spoke to him.
And was he able to speak back, or was he completely?
No. And then, you know, oh God, I remember the things that were being said as well. It's just, what on earth do you say? How on earth do you put that on a 13-year-old boy?
Like,
bye-bye, all the best.
I know, I've talked about that 50. I regret what I said, but also, what could I have said? I don't, although I do think, oh, I wish I'd said something different. I also understand, the fuck could I have said?
What on earth? It was really late at night as well. It was like, you know, 2 in the morning or something. And I just
God. And it must have been so confusing to come from Monmouth to this big city and be in that place and be like,
yeah,
I don't know what, like, all of this looks very important, but this is not my world.
And yeah, it was. And just to see, I don't know, to see the reality of I was quite an anxious kid anyway, for various other reasons before he died. And in fact, there was a diary entry because my dad was nearly on the Zeebrugge. Do you remember the ferry disaster?
Yes. Yeah.
My dad was due to get on that ferry and his car broke down.
Oh, my God.
I know. This is kind of like, I know what he did last summer.
Yeah.
Like, the ferry didn't get him. Meningitis absolutely nailed it.
God.
But he didn't get on the ferry. But for an hour and a half, 2 hours, we thought he had died in that. And that was like 2 or 3 years before, maybe more. And I can remember that panic and that terror. Me and my brothers and my mum running around the house screaming, thinking he was on this ferry.
And
that sort of echoed with me anyway. So to then sit there watching it actually happen.
Yeah.
An actual pillar of your life. I wouldn't even say pillar. Like, this massive character.
Yeah.
This guy was a raconteur. This guy was, he knew everybody. Everyone in the town. It was really, this is almost Downton-esque in the sense that everyone knew him and would talk to him about his mum, who was the mayor, and all this stuff. And this guy is disappearing in front of you.
God.
And you're just like,
wow. Was it strange to see, because I've talked about this as well, like, my dad was, again, big character. And the thing that I found weird in the hospital was that he wasn't moving. Mm. Like, I'd never seen him still.
Yeah.
And that's what because someone said to me, because he wasn't, when they're not old, you're not watching like a frailty, you're watching something that's very strong and loud, suddenly not being that. And that is a very
It's a racing horse that is just paused. And also the size of them. I remember the size of my dad's coffin.
Oh, God.
Going, Christ, he's huge. And the people carrying it. He's a big guy. He was bigger than me, and he was like 16 stone. He was massive.
Oh, my God.
He did admit they were trying, I remember they were trying to see if he was conscious, so they were tickling his foot. And then, so then we did that. We kind of said our goodbyes. God, it's so weird to think that's what we were doing. And then we just sort of went outside back to that waiting room. And then I think, we went back to the waiting room. And then my brothers were with him when he actually died.
Right,
so Guy and Toby took that one.
They
came back in and said he's gone.
So then you went back to school, you said, like 3 days later.
God, we drove back. Like the next day, Toby drove, and I was in the car with a friend of the family who was the wife of the deputy headmaster from the school, who's a wonderful, wonderful woman, and she's been great and stuff, but, you know, there you are again. We drove all the way back to school, to Monmouth, and then I remember getting back and one of my dad's best friends coming over and the look of thunder on his face, storming around the house, drawing all the curtains.
Oh, because someone hadn't drawn the curtains.
Because we were going into mourning, apparently. It was just like this preposterous man fighting all the curtains. Curtains in this room that had never been drawn before were being drawn. It was like...
Well, to him, that must have been like, that's the only thing I can do is draw curtains.
That's all I can do is draw curtains.
Why has no one done this?
Like... Didn't say anything to any of us.
Oh, God.
Fussell, his name was. It's completely crazy. He's a guy who used to... He's my dad's friend. He used to play that game from Alien, you know, with the knife.
The knife and the fingers, yeah.
He would sit there chatting to you. But he would do it. His version was he would just let his fingers get stabbed and not react. He was a bit of a psychopath. And he just went around the house drawing the curtains. That was the first thing that happened when we got home.
Oh,
so I just remember thinking, well, I can't do anything now. It's just dark. I can't even read a book.
Can't read Nick Faldo.
Can't read Nick Faldo. And it's just, I mean, that's the other thing as well. I think that's a really big thing. Boredom, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I went back to school. Maybe it was a good thing to go back to school. But...
I can see why they do send kids back to school, because it's normality and it's
something
you know, and getting back into it. I can see the
What did you
thinking.
Do then? Did you go back straight back?
Well, it was my GCSEs 2 weeks later.
Mm. I remember hearing that before,
so it was a really weird... I was actually in the middle of study leave, I think. Or we were about to hit study leave.
Didn't you get loads of extra time there? But you got great grades.
Fuck you. A friend at the time was like, I did get very good grades. I did. And somebody did say something at the time and I was like, What they said was, I didn't get extra time, but
no.
I think what they were...
You're not suddenly dyslexic, you're grieving.
Yeah, I'm grieving,
so
exactly.
You just want to put DDC at the top of the paper and they're going to let you get everything. Just put some teardrops on the paper.
There was something that it would be taken into consideration that my dad
did. Straight A stars, bang.
they said, I'll be honest, they said to me that if I was on the borderline, it would be bumped up.
Right, okay.
So, and I did get some A stars, but I got some A's. And a friend at the time said something to me like, oh, that's why you got it. And I remember thinking, well, excuse me, might be why I got the A stars, but they would have been A's anyway.
It's fair enough. I can make that joke 20 years later, or
how
many years later it is.
Yeah, I know.
At the time, that's a bit hard. That's a bit raw.
I know, bless. I think
that must have been awful to go straight into
exams. Well, the one thing was, I just didn't care. How could I care? And all my friends were obviously like, oh my God, GCSEs. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I did. And my mum said to me, do you want to take them? Like, do you want to just leave it? And I was like, no, let's get them out of the way. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
I've been spending 2 years
but
studying.
How did you revise in those 3 weeks you
I
had
didn't.
Before them? No.
I didn't give a
you
shit.
Can't, no, you
I
can't
didn't,
sit still.
No. I remember trying to, you know, looked at my notes a bit to be like, oh, okay, what happened, you know, what happened in the Russian Revolution? Let's at least...
Get the basics.
1970.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
let's
go. And... But I didn't care, and I think that's why I did do well, because
I wish I didn't care.
More
of that. I've never had that. I remember Chris Evans doing an interview years ago about his dad dying when he was 13 and saying how it made him fearless in the face of everything.
Oh, you didn't have the fearless thing. Yeah, I definitely...
No, I've just had even more of the fear.
See, I've now got more of the fear. Like, I was an anxious child.
Right.
And I became... It made me more anxious.
Yeah.
But definitely for about 5 years, I was untouchable.
Oh, I'd love to have had that.
Yeah, it was quite fun.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I really didn't care about anything.
I
couldn't care less if what you thought about me at all. It was just like, I was like, you know. But then once you get through those 5 years, you start thinking, oh shit, what if this happens now? Because you start realising life's carried on.
I didn't have it because I... These kind of values of that small town world were so part and parcel of my dad, I had to live up to them in a kind of...
Yeah, maybe you had a lot more pressure on you. My brother had a lot of pressure on him as well, like, well, now you're going to be a man.
Is he older?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So how old was he when your dad died?
He was 19.
Oh, God, yeah.
So there was
so now
lot...
you're basically not, you're not 19 anymore, you're 40.
Yeah, yeah. They all treated him like he's 40 and he tried to take over my dad's business and it's really, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, it was an absolute nightmare because they were like, well, yeah, Tom's going to do it. That makes sense. And he's just mental. But I imagine that if you're already, it was a boys' school, right, that you went through.
Yeah.
So you're already in boys' school world.
Yeah.
Two brothers who also had, like, perhaps it is just like that automatic male pressure becomes like, right.
Yeah, I think so. And another big thing about it was that I really, which I don't anymore, but I really believed he was in the afterlife. Like, I passionately believed in that until I was like 24, 25. I really believed in God. And I really believed that he was there with me, which was, I don't think that's, I don't, I'm not a fan of that now as an approach. Like, I'm.
It's hard when you lose it. I also had a very strong belief and then lost it. And then I think that sucks, doesn't it? Because you think you've had a bit of comfort, and then the comfort's taken away.
How could I not? How could I not believe in the afterlife after that happened? So it did provide comfort, sure, but at the same time, it kind of it doesn't, because it's you're on the phone to someone who's not answering back the whole time.
Yeah.
You're praying and you're thinking about this person and you're sort of guessing what they're saying back to you. It's just you've got this fantasy going in your head. It's a fiction, whereas the reality is hard at first, but over time is a better way to do it.
How did you feel at 24 then, or when you sort of lost your faith?
That was a big part of the hurdle for me. I mean, it was a complete cliche. I read The God Delusion. It was just like, what a cliche. What a loser. But I did, and it was brilliant, and it changed everything. But I felt sad. But then since getting older, my relationship with my dad, and it's, you still, I think when you're grieving someone, you still have to talk about your relationship with them because it changes even though they're not there.
Yes, that because especially I think if, well, I think it happens anyway, whatever age you are, but if you're 13 or 15, you really change. So the difference between, like, say your dad dies at 30 and then you're 40, that's not as big a leap as what we've been through. Like,
no, 13,
as people, we've changed so
exactly, much. Changed so much. And just kind of changed... like how I evaluate what choices he made in his life at the time.
So how do you feel about that now?
I feel a lot of anger towards him. And I feel like I'm not a massive fan, if I'm honest. Which my
brothers
don't.
When
really
you were
know.
Younger, did you hold him a bit more as like super dad? Was he kind of like, when you were younger, was he kind
was.
Of like,
he was
just super cool?
He was beyond, was he cool? No, but he was just like the ideal, I guess, that you aspired to. He was loud, and he was a raconteur. Like, he would tell stories all the time. Like, he made people laugh. Oh, I wonder why I've ended up what I do for a living. But he, you know, I remember someone saying, a family friend saying, you should really go over with your brothers all the stories you used to tell and write them all down. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's just like, what? That'd be so annoying to try and remember them all. But I remember that actually really stuck with me because I felt like, that's another thing that's passed away here. That's another thing that's gone, another loss, another level to it. Like the showbiz of him, you know?
Yeah.
He was a showbiz economist in a way. So yeah, I didn't sort of doubt him, but I was just starting to when he died. There were various things that happened that I won't go into, but it made me kind of feel like, I'm not sure you are that perfect human being. That was just beginning. Then he died.
Which is normal at 13 anyway.
Yes, exactly.
I think you start looking at your parents a bit like,
yeah.
Are you guys all right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure you've made some great decisions here. But then the whole living in London thing and just various things.
Has that happened since, because you've got two kids?
Mm.
So as you've become a dad, have you started really going...
Massive part of it. Massive part of it. Because before you have kids, you just think, that was the way it was. Those were the decisions that my parents... It's amazing that what it does to you in that way, that the world is as it is until you have kids. And then you go, oh, no, there are a series of events that have made it this way and people have chosen to make it that way.
Yeah.
And you look back on it and go, I can't... When I'm away for a few weeks away from my kids, I can't bear it. So, and the importance of having us both around and all these things, like, what were you thinking? And all the arguments, like, let's go back to that fact as well. My mum and dad had a terrible, terrible marriage. And the arguments and the bitterness and the feuds that were going on, it's like, why did you do that in front of me? Why did you do all those things? So I have a lot of problems with him, which is, in a way, you know, oh, God, it sounds really brutal, but I feel like... I spent enough time grieving him and worshipping him, and now I've just moved on, which is like ultra. I've moved on to the next one.
No, I think that's fine. I think you just go through different things, because my relationship with my dad was not good at 15.
No.
So, I mean, I was like, we were proper, like, teenage daughter, dad not getting on, you know, that kind of stereotypical fuck you. I thought, it was, you know, I'd say he was a twat to his face all the time. Yeah,
wow,
like
okay.
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
And so when he died, I had that, a lot of guilt about...
Yeah, the guilt.
I'd been,
guilt.
How angry I had been to him.
And when did you lose the guilt? As you've got older?
No, I think maybe what's interesting what you're saying, I've reversed a little bit of like, I've become a much softer to how I see him, to how I did when he was alive, because I've started to go, I think you were doing your best. And I think actually a lot of stuff I was very angry with you about, I would have done that. Like, and we have the problem was we're very similar.
Yeah.
Whereas my brother has gone the other way. Like, yeah, he's much more, there's still stuff he's like, what the fuck did he do that? Like, and I feel like because I was so angry, I feel like I've spent my life grieving, trying to get less angry.
Yeah, okay.
Gosh, so, because I never worshipped him, ever. I never, ever.
Oh, really?
Even as a kid.
Before the teen thing. Oh, wow.
Even as a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you're so similar, you just...
I think we're really similar, and he really wanted me to worship him. He really wanted me to be daddy's little girl. And I was like, oh, mate, jog on. Too much, too needy. Like, that's a hard, tough crowd.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So he was a bit like a beta dad in that sense. He was like, oh, come on, come with daddy.
No, he was like, he sounds similar one way. He was this, raconteur, this big character.
Right.
Because other people loved him. I was a bit contrary. So I was like, well, I'm not just going to give it to you just because everyone else says you're amazing.
That's so good. I love that. That's great.
Harsh.
Harsh, but like... Surely you have to realise that part of him would have loved that.
Yeah, because true. That's true, actually.
He's going to see himself. When you're doing that to him, he's like, yeah, she's just like me.
I've never thought that, actually. That's interesting. Yeah, perhaps he did understand it a little bit. But also, he was away a lot for work.
Oh, really? God, that's really similar.
He was away
what
a lot.
What did he do?
You know, people don't realise, when you get married, you have to put down what your dad does.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
And so I turned to my mum, I go, what did he do? She went, oh, I don't know. And I said to my brother, it's registry office, but my brother like walked me in the room. I said, Tom, what do you do? And he went, oh, business.
He got for business. That's a hashtag. Hashtag business.
Like, none of us really know. It was like marketing, consulting. No, it's like consulting. So it's like, what does that mean?
That doesn't mean anything.
It's business.
Yeah.
PR.
When did he die? What year did he die?
98,
right.
98,
yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, not. Similar, same decade.
Yeah. Do you count the years? What do you like,
yes,
when the
I
date
do.
Comes in the year? Are you like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about anniversary? So, what time of year was it then?
December, just before Christmas. Happy
days. Oh no.
Also, my brother decided to get married 3 weeks later.
What? Your brother got married 3 weeks after your dad died.
Brother, the wedding was all planned anyway.
Oh right. Okay. God, I thought it
wasn't like.
No, what are we gonna do, guys?
Do you know what? Yeah. He
like that is mad.
Host was fiance in the hospital. It was all planned.
Oh,
my dad did not approve because he was 23.
Are they still together?
They are very happily married.
Oh!
Yes, they are. They have three lovely kids and he was wrong.
Oh, that's nice.
So, yeah. But so I'm going to this big family wedding 3 weeks later again.
But that must have been like the main event is not here because I imagine he would have been planning a speech.
Right.
And it would have been like, oh, what's Dickie going to do?
All of those things. And then my brother sat me down before and said, listen, got some great news for you. And I was like, well, what is it going to be? You're gonna sit on the head table. You're gonna sit where your dad was going.
Oh my god, Tom! No,
it's just the worst.
I want to go back in time now and say no.
Just don't do that.
You have to sit next to your mum at where your
my alcoholic mum who is slowly getting shit faced. Because her husband died 3 weeks earlier. Her husband, who she was about to...
We're both covering our faces.
Her husband, who, and I'm happy to tell you this, she was about to divorce. They were about to get divorced. They had divorce papers in the house, which had she signed, then it's just, it's beyond...
Oh, my God.
Belief. So I'm at this wedding, and...
Do you now hate weddings? That would scar me.
Oh, my God, maybe that's why I hate weddings.
That would really scar me.
I hate people being happy. That's what it is.
Like, but I would just be like, any time at a head table, I'd be like...
There are so many levels of things that I haven't considered, but that is not... Yeah, maybe that's why I can sit in those formal situations. And everyone was smiling and pretending to be having a good time. And it was just like, what are you doing? I can't believe that they chose to get married. I would have been like, should we put that on hold for a year? Doesn't really matter. No, we've got to get married.
Again, it's that sense of... there seems to be a real sense, forgive me if I'm wrong, in your family of like, what's the word, like propriety.
Yeah.
You know, you do the right thing.
This is the thing, this is the
duty,
way it's done.
Duty, like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Duty and almost ritual, like social rituals that you go through. And like,
that's what we do, carry
that's
on.
That's what we do, that's what the Price family does. And the whole time you've got this 13-year-old being dragged along, you know.
And you must have been such a shining example of it not working. Like, that must, do you think, because I think children sometimes reflect the truth, don't
they? Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure they were smiling and looking at your little face being like, oh, my God, this is bad. He shouldn't be here. Keep smiling. Maybe somehow this will be okay.
That's the other thing. I wonder if there were any adults there thinking, who sat him on the head table?
This isn't okay.
Why is he in the chair that his dad literally 3 weeks ago would have been preparing a speech to sit in? Like, why on earth is that 13-year-old child sitting there?
And again, I can see the logic of, like, you know...
Yeah, but he sold to me as well. It was sold
to me.
Yeah, of
course, sold to you. Like, oh, it's a nice thing. You're going to sit there with where your dad would have been. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But thinking, Briscoe, think how you think I'm sitting in my dead dad's chair. Like,
exactly. It's like...
It's like being in the fucking coffin. It's just...
Yeah. It's like fucking Hamlet. I mean, it's just... Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I'm surprised no one got up and threw it, got the knife out. Oh, Fuzzle got his knife out.
Yeah, Fuzzle with his knife.
Didn't start doing a monologue.
Exactly. You know, Fuzzle was too busy drawing the curtains in there. It was a very dark wedding. Yeah, it was just... It was completely... Oh, God, it was so awful, Gary. So awful.
So that's obviously the time. So then moving forward, like, as your teenage years...
Yes.
How did you cope? Did you talk to people? Did you get offered counselling?
No. And then I found myself, just before I left Monmouth to go to uni, I found myself basically having a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
Just like fizzing.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yes. Because you've got post-traumatic stress. You've got a billion images a day rushing through my head.
God.
You know, that thing where... And,
you can only imagine them sick. I was so glad when that ended. Like, well, for me, sick or ill, that's all I could see. I couldn't remember anything else.
That is brutal. I was saved that because it was so quick for him. That's hard.
But just like you said, the images are just like... Ugh.
Yeah, they just haunt every day, several hundred times a day. And at the same time, trying to get on with being a teenager and... Just like...
Did you have a girlfriend at the time that you talked to?
No,
anything like that?
Not really, no.
Did you joke about it? Were you like, oh yeah, my dad's dead? Or...
Not really. It just...
Didn't exist.
Honestly, it was like he didn't exist. It really was. It was like he didn't exist, Karen. We just all moved on. Isn't that awful? But that was the only way that it could be done. And it was... Yeah, it was... No one talked about it. And the anniversary would come. My mum would get the date wrong. Like, no, it's December 2nd. Guys,
my brother gets the date wrong.
I can't
get my head around it.
We were all there. We were definitely all there. I can get my diary if you like. It's just the minutiae of it.
So what happens? So you're leaving this very obviously closeted community and school.
Yeah, very
tight knit. Done for you.
Exactly. And then I just found myself going mad. So I went to see a doctor. I got a bit of counselling then, CBT, very basic stuff. I remember that my GP, Dr. Payne, brilliant name for GP. I sort of sat down and, you know, he knows my background. He looked after my mum. He's the one who's been giving my mum all these tablets for her various illnesses for the last 20 years. And I sit there and I'm like, I shouldn't need to say a word. Yeah. I should just look at you and go, I'm that guy with all the things, so can you help? And he just looked at me and went, so what's wrong with you? And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I can take you through my family history, Dr. Payne.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you think you're throwing yourself in the river? Are you? And I was like, you
know. Is that what he said?
Yeah. Do you think you're throwing yourself in the river? I was like, no, that hadn't occurred to me. But now
God.
You've said that, I mean, sure. Yeah, I could do. I mean,
Dr.
I'm a terrible
Payne.
Swimmer. Dr. Payne, what were you thinking? So, to be fair, he got me some stuff, but it didn't, it was two sessions. So then I went off to uni, and then again, I was a nervous wreck. The anxiety, my God. Did you get out there?
I have had since, like, so I've been in counselling for a year now.
Okay.
And I'm only just realising how much I've suffered from anxiety. Like, I just thought it was me. I just thought, that's who I am. I just worry incessantly, have heart palpitations, and think everyone's going to die.
Yeah,
like, that's normal, right? Like, we all feel like that.
It's okay to get constant indigestion. That is normal, right?
Oh, my God. Indigestion.
To be constantly doing that because any second now, the Grim Reaper might be knocking on the door.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, and I, like... As I've slowly come to terms with, like, oh, I've had anxiety, whether that's for my dad or not for my, you know what I mean, you start looking back at your life and going, oh, I see, when that was happening, that was anxiety. Like, that's what was going on.
Just,
so, but yeah, I mean, you know, it took me to my mid-30s to kind of start unpicking these things.
At least you did it. I mean, I remember hearing stories about people in their 60s who just suddenly went, oh, it's because my mum died when I was 15. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
yeah, so I went off to Warwick and I sort of got through it.
Did you have any counselling at uni?
A little bit, but not really enough.
And did you find that you didn't really talk about your dad? Did you find like you were, it was like...
No, I couldn't.
Yeah, that's what I had for ages.
I can't really. I find it really hard.
It was like, oh, I could talk about anxiety or these things over here, but to get to the root was quite difficult to be like,
yeah.
Obviously it's because my dad fucking died.
Yeah, exactly. But in the also, the other thing that's tied up with, and maybe this is another reason, I mean, this is a big part of... The guilt thing, I haven't really talked about that.
Yeah.
I felt tremendous levels of guilt for not feeling the right things when it happened.
You
know what I mean? That
yeah.
whole kind of, why am I not sadder? Why am I not? Why am I back at school and quite enjoying maths a week later? I should be feeling awful. I should be... All these things. And all that fed into me, like, hating myself. Like, I had the worst self-esteem. And I can remember the... My counsellor when I was at Warwick, when I went to my first ever therapy session, saying... Why do you deserve a place under the sun? I think that was her phrase. Do you, you know, or maybe she said, she didn't question it. She said, you know, you do deserve a place under the sun. And I was just like, I just broke. I couldn't, the very idea, like I felt really bad about myself because I could never get to discussing my dad and talking about him and how I felt about losing him because I was so wrapped up in my own grief.
Yeah.
It's almost like your grief is different to the event of losing the person. It's like the person going is like loss. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like the big bang, if you like. And this and the grief is the ripples afterwards. And I'm so wrapped up in that, I can't quite get back to that.
And that's why I do think counselling is a good thing. Obviously, it's up to individuals, but you have to get through all those ripples in grief to find out, oh, at the heart of this is a very lost, lonely little teenager that just basically is a bit confused at what happened to them.
Yeah.
But there's so much to get through.
So much to get through. And to separate yourself from yourself a bit as well, which sounds like the definition of insanity. But you do have to look at it in an impartial way and be objective about it. And that moment that happens, and that started to happen to me in my 20s, that's why I was thinking of myself as getting better, much better. I did a lot of counselling then. I moved to London and then I got an amazing counsellor. And I spent,
you did then have proper...
Yeah, like, I spent like 5 years going
amazing.
In, which was great.
But it's funny, people, like, I think if you haven't lost someone, you might be like, 5 years? Like, yeah, minimum.
Absolute minimum.
Like, I feel like I'm so at the beginning of quite a big unpicking of stuff. Because, like, and it's so, because obviously when a trauma happens, all these decisions get made in your brain, especially when you're a teenager and you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I think you make a lot of quick oh, that means this, that means this,
yeah.
therefore I'm going to do that, therefore when everyone's going to die. So nothing is safe and you can't trust anyone. Great, sir, door closed.
And then to throw that approach into having kids.
Yeah,
I mean, because you're already anywhere, even if you're the most sane person in the world, when you have kids, the cellar door's open and that is revealed to you. So if you've already got that up and running, if you've already got a very well-defined cellar, which we have, if we've had these tragedies.
So well-defined.
It's brilliant. I could take you through it.
How do you deal... So now, I would say like we're jumping over, but it's so interesting.
Sorry,
how
do
you deal with...
I'm
yeah, me too. That's maybe that, we'll blame it. Our dads are dead.
It's a DDC thing.
It's a DDC
thing. What happens. That's what happens.
When you have with the kids... So obviously my baby's very young, but how do you deal, because I know yours are older, talking about granddad or grandpa? Do you talk
grandpa,
about him?
Yeah, we do.
That's good.
Very matter of fact about it.
Right.
Initially, it was very hard. I found it very difficult.
It's been hard the first time you had to properly say it, I imagine. Like...
Yes. Actually, was it, though? I'm not sure it was the first time I said it, because I felt like, in a really weird way, I felt like I was acting out a thing that I knew I'd always have to do one day.
Oh, yeah.
And I always knew I'd have kids, and I always knew I'd have to explain to my kid that the grandpa wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it was that was fine. And the way that he took it was beautiful. He's just like, oh, okay. Okay. So he's in Africa now, then. No. What? This fucking book. There's this book where granddad dies and he goes and lives in this amazing, jungle, basically.
Right.
And my son read it. And
great,
2 months
book.
Later, where's grandpa? He's dead. So he's in Africa.
Great, thanks, book. Great.
Yeah, I mean, we can go with Africa if you like. Fine, let's say Africa. Fine. But it's the surprise element when they'll suddenly ask you about it.
Yeah.
What would grandpa be like now? That's another big thing that happens. That's a whole new...
Oh, God.
Sorry, it's really bleak, isn't it?
No, tell me. I need
but
to be
it, well, it's just a whole new level of pain when you start to think... How he would have loved his grandkids and all that stuff.
I haven't hit that, definitely.
Yeah, and also, like, what would he be doing now? Like, he'd be 73, 74 now. What would he be doing? Da, 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 da. All those questions, all those hypotheticals. No matter how much you've recovered from what happened in the past, you're still always having to readjust the future to the fact they're not there. And that's tricky.
And that's what we're talking about. The relationship changes. Even though they're gone, you have changed. So your relationship changes with the person, you know, the memory of them. So of course, when you have kids, you start thinking of them as a grandparent, as completely different.
Yeah, as a completely different being. And which they are. All parents become, they're so different as grandparents to how they are as parents.
Do you have the slight anger when people have both parents and their grandparents and they say things like, oh my god, my bloody mum and dad are coming over and oh my dad got them all worked out and I'm like, fuck you. Are you more mature than me?
Do you know what? No, it's not mature. It's absolutely, there's one thing I'm not in that's mature in this instance. I'm trying to think why I don't have that. I think it's because I'm just so used to it now.
Yeah.
That it just, and part of me, I don't know if it's a lie or not, but there's a story I fed myself for years and years after it happened, which was that you wouldn't be the person you are now without that event happening to you.
Yeah, which I definitely think is true. Like, I always say that a lot on the show. Like, it defines me.
It completely weaves its way into you. And and to kind of, like, if he was still alive, it would be a completely different set of scenarios. Yeah. I don't know. So I honestly, no, I'd love to be able to go, yeah, dickheads, because I do, I'm sure, you know, but I only get it
when they moan about like their parents and they've got both.
Do you know what I do have though? This is really dark.
Go on, yeah, let's do it.
Really dark, we're getting really dark. I do have a sense, as a lot of my friends, now we get to this age, our parents are starting to get older and parents start to become a thing you have to look after and care for. Mm. I do think, oh, thank fuck, he's gone.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't have to. Nothing awful's going. I mean, that's one down. So at least that's happened. That's,
I know.
You know, because like Beth's parents are they're young. They're full of life and energy. And the idea that one day we're going to have to go through that, I'm like, oh, Christ. Well, at least I've got one down. That's so bleak, isn't it? That's awful.
No, but I know exactly what you mean because it's like my husband has lost both his parents. And, and he was saying, you know, like at least it's done. Yeah. Like, obviously, I'm not happy about it.
But does he feel a sense of, and I wish there was a better word, but is there a sense of freedom about that?
Yeah, no, because my mum lost both her parents like within 2 weeks of each other, and she was very good with him. She talked to him. She said, you know, you feel so alone in the world, the most alone you've ever felt when you lose both, because you finally are truly alone. But you are also free of all parental responsibility.
Yeah.
So it's a very strange, which is obviously I haven't experienced at all, so I can only voice what they said, but you are free of having to worry about someone.
Yeah. The thing that has made me the needy performer that I am, this desire to impress him, that thing where you're like, I wish he could see this, I wish he could have seen that. That's the thing that there's no cure to that, and still to this day I find myself getting things like career things happen, obviously babies and being married and all those things, you do just think that, and there's no way you can fill that gap. You can have all the family and all the friends and all the Facebook likes, you know what I mean, and all the Instagram likes, but it's such this gap right in the middle, and that's, I don't know, that's just something you have to manage. I think that's just something you have to just, you know,
that's the manage is the right word. It's like, we were talking about this on the Griefcast Twitter, at the Griefcast, the other day, just saying it because someone tweeted, like, I'm like, will I get over this? I think she was very fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh to the club.
It feels like we've turned into vampires.
I know. And it is a bit vampiric, isn't it? And all these people were like, you just get better at managing things.
It's true.
And it's so hard to imagine when you're in that first year.
Yeah.
I think especially, actually, again, I don't know if you hear this, I do sometimes feel sorry for people who are older.
Yeah.
Because the way the teenager, there's no choice, is there? You sort of don't know what's going on anyway.
Yeah.
And lots of stuff is done for you. You do get sent back to school.
Loads of stuff happens to you when you're a teenager. As opposed to beyond then, you, in theory, you start to choose what you do with your life and stuff. But at that stage, it's absolutely true. It's just another one of the things that happened to us.
Yeah.
And so you rolled with it. But then after that, in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you start to make life happen for yourself. And, you know, I think that's really true. I think managing it's a good thing. And I also, I wish I hadn't spent so much time believing in the afterlife and believing in this sort of almost superstition, because it's not, it doesn't work for me. It didn't work for me. And I know a lot of people, it does work for them. And you have to really believe in it. Factually believe it's an actual fact that he's there waiting for you, but I didn't, and I never could, and I feel like I spent too much time almost saying it's all right, I'll see him eventually, it's all fine, and it doesn't help you get over it, it doesn't help you achieve what you need to achieve, which is getting on with your life. I don't know, it doesn't close the wound up, it stays open and it stays kind of
it really active. Does doesn't it, because again, if it works for you, it works for you, but I know what you mean of like that. You have to accept you're not going to see them.
And
that is it.
I swear to God, in my 20s, when I worked that out, I became, fuck it, let's put a number on it, 60-70% happier in my life because it was sad, you know. And
but then
I recognize
it's done, man.
And
it's
I'm not like, when and why can't I?
And
I'm going to crack on with my life now, probably. Yeah. And I'm going to not be living in this grief.
But that's the point, isn't it? That's the sort of like nub of it all. Of like, if you're waiting, you're waiting. But once you know, it's like a friend. Is like, they ain't coming. I don't have to hang outside Topshop waiting for them.
Right.
I can go home.
They're going to be here. They're shopping on ASOS. They've already got this somewhere else. It's done. That is exactly the thing. It's happened and I can move on and get on with stuff.
And it is like, there is a painful realisation. There's no getting around that. Of course it's painful to be like, I'm not going to see. Of course it hurts. Yeah. But then I think that's another part of grieving, to accept that you can't avoid the pain.
This idea that, you know, there is a balm or a solution or some kind of... And for a lot of people, the religion thing works for them. You know, I know someone who's incredibly religious and he will go to funerals and he'll be like...
I'll be happy.
To be honest, I don't think I need to come to this funeral because I'm going to see them. And that makes me... that actually boils my piss because it's just...
That annoys me as well because I'm like, oh, really?
You're getting poked in the eye. Get poked in the eye. It's going to happen and then you'll get better over time. And if you stay in that moment where you're constantly, it festers. It just festers and it's not the way to do it. So that's one thing I wish I hadn't sort of got into already.
So your relationship with your mum now, do you ever talk about your dad?
No way.
Really?
I mean, sometimes she'll bring him up and like my brothers will talk about him, but I'm just not, I just feel like I've done that, you know?
Yeah.
That sounds really harsh, but you know, he would have, he did this and stuff and all the kind of stories. I don't know, really. I just, maybe I'm becoming that repressed small-town person of just pretending, sorry, who's that? I don't even know. My dad. Did I ever meet him? I'm not sure. You know, I feel like I did a lot of that. I did a lot of that in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like combat trousers. I'm on skinny jeans now. I don't care if people think that sounds harsh. Trust me, I did my time and it was awful and horrific. And I've got to get on with stuff and having this life and my kids.
Do you feel like, I have this sometimes, like there's like this cold hand of grief. And if you allow that conversation, it might drag you back.
100%.
Yeah, that's sometimes.
Oh, I have no doubt. This is fear. Yeah.
And I think I used to have that a lot and I've sort of decided to like immersion therapy, which is what I'm with this podcast. It's like talking about it all the time.
It's not even one hand. This is both hands.
Yeah, like I'm in it.
Yeah, right.
But I know that feeling of like, if I talk about it, I might go back there. I don't want to go back there. Like you're not like, you know.
But what is it that we're actually scared of? What is it about there that you're scared of? For me, it's probably just being utterly incapable of speaking because I just cry and scream. Do you know what I mean? Like almost like a primal scream thing. I think that's what it is. I think I'm scared that I'm just going to
We talked about
there.
That, you know, the scream that's just a sound. Or the cries that are just like...
Oh, God.
You hear... But I used to make me laugh. Do you know? Because I'd hear myself and go, what is that?
But see, the problem I had is I didn't think I cried enough. I would berate myself for not behaving properly. This is the problem.
But you put so much pressure on yourself because you were 13 and you were an all-boys private school. Like, what the fuck did you know about expressing emotion?
Still now, what do I know about it? But exactly. And I didn't cry. I can remember, God, there's one night when about a week after he died and I'm in bed and there's a picture of him and I'm looking at it. And the reason I was looking at it is because I was thinking, I don't know what to feel. I'm looking at this picture. It's just some ink on a piece of paper that has nothing to do. I don't know what to feel. And my aunt came in and she was like, oh God, he was your best friend. And she was hugging me and she was like crying all over me. So I started crying because she was like a yawn, like it's infectious. And so I remember sort of thinking, oh okay, fine, he was my best friend. And suddenly I was reacting in a way that was dictated by other people. I never felt like I naturally did it myself. I just kind of...
But you must have been in shock.
Yeah, I think so. I think I still am in a way.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gone anywhere. I think that
like
PTSD thing. Yeah.
Because I definitely was in shock for a long time.
How long?
Years.
Yeah.
I think I'm coming out of shock, actually.
That's what this is.
Yeah, I think having a baby and doing the podcast is like, I feel like I'm cracking open an egg I've been living in.
Yeah.
And that doesn't do down any of the experiences I've had in the egg, like as in my life has been great, but I've just been in an egg. But
hey,
you can have fun in an egg. It's fine.
Yeah,
like it's not.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's so shocking that your parent is there and then gone. And I wonder if you have what I had. Because they worked away, you were used to that.
Absolutely.
So it felt like for ages they were just working somewhere.
That's a huge, huge thing. Yeah. The weekends would come and I'd go like, oh yeah, he's not here. Oh, it's Monday again. Never mind.
Yes.
Huge thing. He was away, so I never saw him anyway. Like, we'd speak on the phone quite a lot.
Yeah.
But that was a huge part of why I felt guilty, because I wasn't sitting there crying going, where's my dad, to do my bedtime story. He never did that anyway.
Exactly. If you haven't had that relationship anyway.
No. Which is why I'm now so...
Oh my God,
my poor children.
Bedtime stories, I'm in the bed with you.
Please leave me alone, Daddy. It's getting to that stage. He's only five, my eldest, and he's already going, please stop this, Daddy.
But I, for a long time, I remember at least 6 months afterwards, people asking me how I felt, and me just saying, just feels like he's away. Because a lot of
At least you were that tuned into it. At least you could say that.
Well, again, I was 15. I was a girl. I wasn't at private boarding school. My dad went to a private boarding school. That's why I think I know... Like that mentality.
And that's why he was so needy with you to love him.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and like he had two older brothers. Right. They all went to the same boarding school. And yeah, like they were very repressed.
Yeah.
Welsh middle class family.
This is ridiculously similar.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the funny thing about my dad is that so the year before he died, my mum lost both her parents within 2 weeks of each other.
That's horrific. How?
My granddad had a heart attack, and basically they'd been together for years and years and years. My granny just literally gave up.
Oh, no.
Like, she's proper brokenhearted.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not living here without him. Oh. Yeah, it was very... But, you know, they went together and all the things you say. But my mum was crying, and my dad said to my mum about 2 weeks afterwards, I think you should be over it by now.
God. Did you see him say that?
I didn't. My mum's told me about it since. But this is what I think is so interesting. He'd never had a death.
No.
So he fucking died. He didn't really know. Both his parents were alive.
He only had one death.
And it was his. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he said to my mum was like, I think I'm still upset about it. He was like, well, when my parents go, I won't be upset. They lived a good life. He had no understanding of grief. And then here I am, his daughter, like obsessed with grief and understanding it.
Yeah.
But I think... Oh, I've completely gone off topic.
You're in
shock because somebody was not around very much. So your domestic world didn't change. My domestic world didn't really change.
Absolutely not. The domestic world didn't change at all. Yeah. My domestic world, as it was before, was pretty shit anyway.
Yeah.
But that just kind of carried on.
Yeah.
And
do you feel he would be proud, or do you feel like...
I think he... So because of the way I'm feeling towards my dad at the moment, which might well change in 5 years'
time,
the place I'm at with him at the moment is I don't care what he thinks because I am cross with him. I am, so in terms of would he be proud or not, I just don't care. I'm sick of it at the moment. I'm sick of that sense of having to project what he is in my head.
May I cod psychoanalyze you?
100% help yourself.
I wonder, because you were 13.
Yeah.
You were a child. That's not really a teenager. It's a child.
Yeah.
So you've had child grief for ages, and it sounds to me like
you've moved to teenage grief.
Because I feel like I'm ending my teenage grief, and I feel like I'm getting into much more, and it sounds patronising.
You're saying your grief is more mature than my grief.
Yeah, exactly, no. But I feel like, because I've been 15 for 20 years. I've been 15 for 20 years.
Oh my gosh.
I don't care what you think. Fuck you, I don't care. Yeah. I couldn't care. He was an idiot anyway. And now I am having to let go of the teenage me.
Yeah.
And move it forward. And I think that's what we were talking about, like grief keeps moving. But the thing that they often say about kids is you freeze at that age.
Oh my God, I thought I had a superior grief to you. And I really feel like you've just...
Actually, what's happened is...
In that moment of God psychoanalysis, which is absolutely bang on. Yeah, because also I tell myself at 13 I was a teenager, but I wasn't. I was a 10-year-old,
yeah,
basically.
Of course.
And so you've kind of wide-eyed and what's happened. But now you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
the way I am towards him at the moment is 100% teenage.
But you never got to be a teenager to him.
No, I didn't.
So now you're doing it.
God.
Like that thing, I never got to be an adult with him. So I find it, as I start forming an adult relationship with him in my head, it's very alien. And that I would say that's past year of having therapy, having a baby, and having to go, you're a mum, you can't keep thinking, you were twat, didn't talk to me. Because now I'm thinking, oh, it is hard having kids, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
And that's why I can see why he was tired.
But I would say, to counteract that I have... some really good reasons.
Oh yeah, no, don't.
No. I'm not. You said is absolutely bang on. But it's because you said about having kids.
Yeah.
Having my kids has pushed me into that teenage phase with it because
it pushes you on.
I know how to do this, and I'm doing this better than you did it.
Yeah. Well, that's what my brother said. He had that really. He was like, I can't believe what he did sometimes. Whereas I feel like I'm more losing the anger because I've been angry for so long.
Yeah. God, angry is not an emotion I would ever put on your carry ads. That's so weird.
Exactly. And that's, but if my brother heard that, he'd laugh. He'd be like, she's angry. Yeah. She's such an angry person.
Wow. Just like a really well cloaked punk. It's amazing. It's so weird. It's so funny.
Yeah. I'm a very, the level of fire inside is, which I am now, I do think, getting better at, but my God, it's very easy to get stoked.
So with the anger stuff, because I had big anger problems as well. Yeah. Big anger, I had to go through a lot of, I'd be starting fights with people at gigs and stuff like that. Not when I was on stage, when I was at the back of the room and I couldn't see. Like, mad, properly mad. My anger is, oh God, that's one of the things I'm most grateful to therapy for, actually, compared to where I was when I was 25. Like, I just don't have it. I had, like, smashed up printers because they didn't work, which is probably fair enough because printers not working.
Oh my God, I'd smash things.
Teeth marks in my steering wheel.
Yeah.
From biting steering wheel. Like,
I mean, I can't drive, but teeth marks in things, swearing things. That if something doesn't work.
For you, that really surprises me.
Is that funny? Because that's how I feel. It's like, what do people see? Because if you ask my husband or my family, they'll be like, my mum and brother once sat me down and said, we're afraid of you and you need to stop your anger. Like, they didn't have the anger.
Does it still flash up now?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, it is. I have to really be like, whew. Because that's how I learnt to deal with things is, and my big thing with the anger, definitely at 15, if I'm angry, I'm not crying.
Yeah.
So it keeps people away.
And anger is a form of control.
Yeah.
You can control that emotion and it's malleable somehow. You can push it around.
When I was at school and I was in a classroom thinking, well, I don't know what, I want to bawl my eyes out and what my life is falling apart. Oh, it's easier to throw a chair.
God, that's so true.
And then they kick you out of the classroom and they don't ask you any questions.
Amazing.
Amazing. So send me to the library.
Is that right? Yeah. She's being troublesome. Why is she being troublesome? I don't know. Just get her to the library.
They would try. They'd be like, well, we know something's going on, so if you want to talk about it.
So did anyone sort of grab onto you when your dad died? Did anyone say, listen, I want to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you every day. I'm going to bother you. I'm going to phone you. Because that's what you would do. That's what
you
do.
And that makes me want to cry a little bit now. Yeah. Like, maybe they tried, and maybe I wasn't in the place where I wanted to hear it, but I definitely didn't. I really thought, Hollywood film-wise, some older person would come along.
Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting.
Robin Williams, who was going to help me. Yeah. And they didn't. My mum was amazing. My mum really...
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was like... She really kept me and my brother as much as possible on the straight and narrow. But like, there wasn't anybody who was like, oh, maybe listening to this, somebody would be really upset. Okay, I'll call it. My dad had a lot of male friends who were there when he was sick and then weren't really there. Mm. And I found that really hard because they sort of... Yeah. They, when he was sick, they were like... They didn't say, I'm going to be your dad, like you had. But I, in my head, I was like, you'll do. I can come to you.
Yeah. No, not so much. We had that. We had, my dad got loads of letters because he was an institutional guy. He was involved in big institutions. And we got a load of, are they bereavement letters or whatever? Just like, we made this massive folder full of them. And I can remember going through them and like, some really, names that I recognise as a 13-year-old in there. He used to be on Newsnight and stuff like that. Anyone watched Newsnight in the late 80s, early 90s, and there was a man with really bad buck teeth, really terrible teeth, my dad had. That was my dad. And I can remember flicking through his letters. Again, the numbness, just going through it, going, wow, these are beautiful things they're saying about my dad and how clever he was and what an important man he was. This means, these are bits of paper. This means nothing. Why am I not feeling anything? I should be feeling proud. I don't feel proud.
But of course you don't feel proud because in your head he hasn't gone yet.
No, that's so, right. It was like 2 weeks after he'd died.
Exactly.
Like, well, he's just on a long trip to Brussels.
Like, you can't be like, you're talking about like, this Zen nature of like, ah, my dad is dead and I'm proud he was a great man. Like at 13, 15, you're just like, what? That's how I felt constantly. What? What just happened?
So true. I could not put a better word on it. That's like, genius. What? I basically spent my teenage years going, sorry, what?
Yeah, that's how I felt for so long. What?
Just...
Sorry, can someone say that again?
I'm going through a lot of emotions, not really emotions, but can we just go one more time? Just go back. It's so true. And I can remember, God, the thing, going back to my brother's wedding, 3 weeks after my dad had died, and it's at the seaside. I can remember standing on the shore and my brother bollocking me because I was being grumpy.
Oh,
bollocking me, tearing shreds off me. because I was being moany and being sarcastic about everything. I was like...
because, and again, that's defence. That's defence.
Yeah, well, that's why when you were saying just now about going to the like angry place.
I'm afraid if I cry, I might not stop crying.
That's
but
right.
If I'm sarcastic and angry, guess what? Everyone gets pissed off with you and leaves you alone. And you're like, amazing, they left me alone. Oh no, don't leave me alone.
I don't want you to leave me alone. Guys, can't you just put up with me being sarcastic and angry?
And of course, his bollocking... I think people recognise the pain, but they don't know what to do. So they bollock you for stuff and give you shit because they're trying to say, I don't know how to help you.
No, I know. I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, I don't
there's
know
nothing
what to
I can do. But that comes back to it, you know, what we were saying earlier on. There's nothing, there is no solution to this.
Anything.
You just have to get through it. And then over time, all these wonderful things open up, like talking to people, like things like this. And that's amazing. And that is a genuine balm to it. But in the instant, and in the initial moment when it's fresh, it's just... awful.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, but you know.
No, but fresh is, and I think that's what we talk so much about on the show and on the Twitter of like, it does change. That awful bit doesn't last forever.
Mm.
And I think that's all you can offer to someone of like, it won't feel like this forever. It won't. And I'm not saying it won't ever go away. It won't magically not be painful.
Yeah.
But it won't feel like that because I think that first year, especially when you're a kid, is just like, what the fuck do you do with those?
Yeah.
Like, as you said, there's people who lose their parents in their 30s and 40s that can't handle it. How can a 13-year-old boy who, like you said, isn't, you're still a child, how can you deal with it?
I just, it's not possible. And it's not possible. And, to not be able to deal with it and then spend so much time afterwards going, I'm not sure I dealt with that in the best way.
Well, of course you did.
I think I might be a massive wanker. Yeah, I'm definitely a massive wanker. And that's what I basically thought. I mean, I still do think that. But I basically thought, really, I really meant it as well for a good 15 years after it happened. I just thought, I am such a fucking dickhead for not doing it properly.
Oh, it's so harsh. That's such a harsh reading of a situation.
I know, but that's just...
like, and I know this is... okay, this might be really awful, but I feel like we're going there. Like, if it happened to your son, when, if you can imagine him, you would never think you didn't deal with it. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, you
God.
Just want to be like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. You're a baby.
Yeah.
You're a baby.
Yeah, of course.
And I think if you didn't have someone do that to you, this is what I've done, you have to do it to yourself.
Yeah.
You have to hug that little person and go, you were a baby.
Yeah.
You didn't know what you were doing. It's taken me a lot of time to be able to look at that person and see them separately and see.
How do you feel when you see pictures of you, mainly of you? I don't care about your dad because I see pictures of my dad and I'm like, yeah, that's my dad. I know that.
Yeah,
those pictures are like in my retina. But when I see pictures of me at the time,
I feel very strange because I saw a picture of me smiling the other day about 16 and I thought, why are you smiling? Like, what was going on? Like, on a school trip.
Okay.
And I just looked, I think what I thought was, God, I look like a really normal teenager, apart from my goth look.
I think you'll find normal teenager.
And that's what I feel a bit like. You wouldn't know anything was going on, which was entirely my intention. But I sort of thought, God, I wish I hadn't been so good at performing.
Yeah.
Hiding, which of course, and now I do character comedy.
Yeah, it's really, it's all there. This is all making sense.
How do you feel then when you see that?
It depends. It depends the picture I see. There's the pictures of us at that wedding I look at and I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I actually look like I've just taken a beating. Like it's
physical. Of course,
physical.
And you literally have.
Yeah. And then I, like you say, then I see pictures later on and I look like, you know, look like a teenager.
Yeah.
Very poor choice in glasses. Any teenagers listening and you're choosing glasses right now, please be careful because you can make some bad, you can make some bad decisions that will haunt you for the rest of your life. But I just look at a kid having a normal time at school and I just think, oh my God, I know that, like there's pictures from school plays. I'm like, fuck, I remember that night. I remember going back after that play and just not even crying, just feeling desperate, really desperate. And there was no one there. And you're looking at that moment where I'm doing a play, bowing or something at the end, everyone's clapping. And I'm like, that's, you know.
And what do you wish, like if you could meet a 13-year-old now who's going through it, what would you think that they...
I just think you need great people. I sound like a... kind of getting some new employees. Find some great people for your business. You need to get really good people and you're going to get... You need people to bother you and to keep at you and communicate with you and just to communicate. And even if you think that person's a dick and you think you don't need to, just to communicate and don't turn it in on yourself, basically. I think that's what I would say. And maybe that would be, I so turned on myself which is a hard concept to explain to a 13-year-old, really. It's probably not helpful. But just, I would say, just, like, talk to people, and it's such a cliche. I wish I had something less cliche to offer. There's so much cliche in grief. It's so annoying.
I mean, everything you say. The reason they all exist, the reason they are, what else can you say?
It's cliche cast. That's what this is. But I would say, just, like, find that person, and that person is going to call you every day, and they're going to see you every day and have contact. I guess the other thing I'd say is, for God's sake, cry and just scream and gnash your teeth and do all those things. Yeah. I didn't do that enough, and I don't think I let that out.
Yeah.
You know, I think I needed to do some good graveside wailing. But if I went and did it now, it would look odd.
Well, you can't drag it out of you.
Well, that's the other thing. But my therapist told me I should write him a letter and put it in his grave, and I was like, oh, God, I don't think I'm...
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
It's just a bit like...
I can't imagine sitting there to write a letter. Even out of slow, and I'm pretty in touch with my emotions this whole thing, but the idea of going, well, it's been a busy year. like one of those round robin, but for the last 25 years.
Hope you're well. I'm fine.
Haven't seen you for a while. So I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but I would, latch on to someone who you can trust and just go for it.
Tom, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us about your dad, Dickie. Or Dick, should I say?
Well, I don't know, really. Either will do. I mean,
there's not a work context. Exactly.
I can't remember which one was which. I'm sure I got it wrong. My dad. Richard. Yeah.
Richard.
But no one ever called him that.
Depending on if you knew him from work, Dickie. If you were a friend from Monmouth, Dick. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You can follow Tom on Twitter at PriceTom. You can listen to The Leak on the BBC Wales website, or you can listen to Tom regularly on Magic FM. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TheGriefCast, or email thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.